This is Leafs Lunch Playoff Edition with Julia Tesheri and Michael DeStefano on TSN 1050. The playoffs live here.
Hour two of Leafs Lunch up and running. I'm Mike DeStefano, Al's brother. We've got Frank Corrado filling in for Julia Tesheri. And game four tonight in the Stanley Cup Final, Avs and Lightning. We're going to tee that game up coming up in just a little bit. Ryan Rashad going to join us. He's down there, TSN hockey reporter, and also going to chat with him a little bit about the contract extension handed out to Jay Woodcroft sticking around in Edmonton. And then Brian Hazy B, joined the show also at 1:35.
Hazy B. Got
to chat about Austin Matthews' big night and some other notes around the NHL. But before we kind of get into this game and dive into it a little bit from our perspectives, I said we were going to get to my free agent list. Frankie, you already gave yours in the 12 o'clock hour, so now I'm going to give you my list of the top five guys that I think the Maple Leafs could go after in free agency. You went the whole bargain bin type of route. I don't know if I necessarily went bargain shopping as much as you did, but some guys who I still think are players who potentially could fit the mold of what the Leafs could be looking at. So I don't have Johnny Gaudreau or Philip Forsberg or anything like that. But I'll tell you who I do have at number five, and it's Tyler Mott, which is a guy you had at number one. So I appreciate that we both had him on our list, and I think he's a guy who could play in your bottom six. He's got speed. He's got a little bit of grit to him. He blocks pucks all day long, he's a hitting machine, can play on the penalty kill, and also speed and takes
versatile
the puck to the net.
Guy.
Very versatile, can play the wing, can play down the middle, extremely versatile player. So I like Tyler Mott a lot as a potential option. Josh Manson, if they want to go out and get a top four defenseman who is a little bit more of a rugged guy, Josh Manson's that dude, and we're seeing this on display right now in the Stanley Cup Final. You're a big Josh Manson guy. If they could somehow find a way to open up a little bit more cap space, whether that's moving out Kerfoot, getting rid of that Mrazek deal, I think that allows them to be maybe a little bit more players for the middle tier free agents as opposed to just strictly bargain hunting. And he would be a piece that I would be targeting if I were Kyle Dubas.
How's his heat map, though? How's his heat map?
Yeah, the heat map's not terrific. It's not terrific, but you know what? It's not always about the heat map, right? Sometimes it's about crunching dudes, not numbers, and that's what Josh Manson does pretty well.
There you go.
Paul Stastny coming in at number three. There was an interesting article that Pierre LeBrun wrote a couple of weeks ago about how he wants to win. His next contract is going to be about going somewhere where he can win, and I feel like he would be a perfect piece to fit in the middle six in Toronto. And if he's looking to win, he's made a boatload of money in his career. Potentially, he's willing to come in on a bit of a cheaper deal. And he's somebody who had some success last year in Winnipeg. Last couple seasons, he's had in Winnipeg. So Paul Stastny, somebody who could play, again, on the wing, down the middle, bit of a versatile player, could play on the power
play. Smart player.
Really smart player, good dude. I think Paul Stastny should be a player that Toronto could potentially look at as a bit of a value play, and they could pull up the heartstrings that, hey, we're close. We can win. You want to win a championship and be on a good team and also have a good role as a potential top six player? I think Paul Stastny is a solid target for the Maple Leafs. Mason Marchment comes in at number two for me. Former Toronto Maple Leaf, former teammate of yours truly, Frank Corrado.
Should have never been traded, first of all.
It's one of the deals that Dubas definitely, I think, regrets. Traded this guy away. Granted, I mean, well, you could speak to this. Did you think he was going to turn into a 50-point player in the NHL?
Never mind if he was going to turn into a 50-point player. You had him. You didn't draft him. You signed him. You developed him. You spent a lot of time and resources turning him into the player that he is today, and you traded him for a bag of pucks. So definitely, if Kyle Dubas could get at least one do-over, I think that's one of them.
Well, either that one or the Kadri trade. One of the two, I'm sure he'd like to get two overall.
Oh, yeah. There's your big two.
Those are the big two for sure. So, yeah, I think Mason Marchment, though, bring him home. Bring him home on a cheap deal. He's a guy who could definitely play in your middle six. He's got some size, and I don't think it'd be overly expensive to bring him back into Toronto. It's really only one breakout season, so we'll see what happens there. But for me, got to get yourself a goaltender if you're moving on from Jack Campbell. And to me, the best goalie out on the market is probably Marc-Andre Fleury. Whether or not he wants to come to Toronto, I don't know. But Marc-Andre Fleury is clearly a proven winner and an absolute stud. It depends what he's looking to make, though, in terms of money. I am hoping that he's looking to win and would love to take a little bit of a discount to come to a team.
I love how everyone wants to take a discount to come to Toronto.
Absolutely.
Hold on. You take a discount to come to Toronto where you pay 52% tax plus 20% escrow plus cost of living is the most expensive in the league. Yep, that makes sense. Let me take a discount.
He's made so much money over his career. You know, if he wants to win one more Stanley Cup, potentially that's where he can come.
I will say, though, like veteran goalie who can definitely, he'd probably be the guy who can handle this market out of all the goalie options out there.
Well, who would you rather at $5 million if you're going to hand out a $5 million deal to? Marc-Andre Fleury or Jack Campbell?
And you want to win right now? Marc-Andre Fleury.
And that's where I think the Maple Leafs are at. Yeah. So whether or not he wants to come to Toronto, I do not know, but that's the guy who I'd be targeting in net. Billy Husso is a solid option as well, but a little bit less proven, and I'm at the point where I think the Maple Leafs might want to get a proven guy so they don't have to go into it, you know, rolling the dice again, a bit of a crapshoot type of situation like you had last season. And Fleury, you know what you're going to get in that guy. You know what you're going to get. All right, let's transition into tonight's game because I think this is an important matchup tonight between the Avs and Lightning, game four. And for me, it's a bit of a swing game. I honestly believe that this is a swing. Like, whoever wins has all the momentum in the world. If it's the Avs, they're up 3-1 going back home. That's going to be scary for the Lightning to have to go back into Ball Arena knowing what happened in games one and two. And then if the Lightning come out victorious, the Avalanche have to go home, and they've lost all the momentum in the series, and the Lightning feeling good. And when that team is feeling it and they're playing at the top of their game, they're unbeatable. So I think tonight is honestly a must win on both sides. And whoever does, to me, is probably the team that's going to end up winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think both teams have been tested as far as adversity goes in this playoffs. And when I think back to Colorado playing against St. Louis, there was a game where Kemper couldn't make a save, and they lost to St. Louis in overtime. I think it was on a Tyler Bozak slapshot muffin from
five,
the blue line.
Yeah, the one where McKinnon should have stood as the game winner.
McKinnon put the team on his back that night. And then you're thinking, okay, like, is this going to snowball for them? And it didn't. And they showed that they have the resilience to bounce back and play the right way, and goalie made the saves that he needed to make. But this will be a different test because you're going up against Tampa. And Tampa has proven time and time again that when the chips are down, when they're faced with adversity, they relish it. Not only do they bounce back, it's like they love the fact that they're able to show that they can bounce back. So this will be a really good test for Colorado. And for Tampa, you have to be feeling pretty good. Like, you have to be feeling like, okay, we had some answers for them. Maybe we planted a little bit of a seed of doubt for them. But ultimately, like, there's going to be, like, Braden Point doesn't sound like he's going to play. It sounds like Kucherov is going to play. Sounds like Nick Paul is going to play. And are we going to get Kadri? Like, is Colorado going to have Kadri in the lineup?
Yeah, interesting. Kristen Shilton tweeting out that Kadri joined the Avalanche for morning skate today, the first time he's skated with the main group since the injury, and also saw that he was skating with the second power play unit as well. And Darren Dreger says indications are that there's a high probability that Nazem Kadri could play in game four tonight. So that is interesting. Like, if Naz is back in, but what level could he really play at if he does get in
there? Well, and that's the thing. He's not 100. You know he's not 100%. He had a cast
barely,
on a few days
barely
ago.
Barely 40%.
Yeah. And I saw there was a picture of him testing out his hand against the glass, like kind of punching the glass a little bit. Like, I don't know, man. Like,
thumb injury like that?
I've had thumb injuries, but I don't know if I've ever played with a broken thumb. I've definitely played with like a bruised thumb, and it's one of those ones where everything you do, you can feel it, and you try to guard it a little bit throughout the game. I would be surprised, like, if Kadri played tonight, I would be surprised if you saw him playing with that kind of cross-checking physical edge. I feel like he'll still be assertive and he'll still get involved a lot, but you just know, like, he's not 100%. He's got to be watching himself.
Yeah, and in terms of from a betting perspective, I don't think we got enough time to play the sting here, but I'm I think I like Tampa tonight. It's basically a pick 'em over at FanDuel, and I really think that Tampa, the way that they played in game number three, I think they just continue to pour it on at home, and I could see them winning. I see this game going over once again in tonight's game, and a couple of prop bets that I like. Kucherov and Makar, both to record an assist tonight, paying 225. Andre Palat and a win for the Tampa Bay Lightning, paying plus 440. That guy is leading the Tampa Bay Lightning, along with Steven Stamkos, in goals so far through the postseason. And he's been dangerous throughout the Stanley Cup final as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, we'll see, AB. Take us to break, because we got to ask Ryan Rashog how angry everyone in Edmonton is. And then we got to talk to Hazy B. We got a lot. We got a lot going on here.
We do got a lot going on. So Ryan Rashog, a TSN Edmonton Bureau reporter, also down for the Stanley Cup final in Tampa Bay. We'll get his thoughts on Matthews besting McDavid, and also get his thoughts on game four tonight. Hazy B going to join us a little bit later in the hour as well. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frank Corrado. You're listening to Leafs Lunch. You're on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Welcome back into TSN 1050's Leafs Lunch. I'm Mike DiStefano, got Frank Corrado with me, and on the line now we have Ryan Rashog, our TSN Edmonton Bureau reporter from Tampa Bay, ahead of Game 4 tonight. Ryan, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, it's good hockey. It's good weather. Lots of good storylines. Like, if you're going to be away from home covering a Stanley Cup final, this is the way to do it, fellas.
I'm sure it's not too shabby, too, being out in Tampa Bay. It's a pretty solid spot to be, I would think.
Are you doing work poolside like Mike Johnson was?
You know what, man? I would love to go down to the pool, but I didn't get myself into pool shape before the playoffs started. I am not in hanging out by the pool shape. And now I'm not going to speak for Johnny, because I know he's rocking the triceps and the six pack. But I am just not in that kind of condition to go hang by the pool. So that's a big no for me. I'll just stick to a nice cool bath.
Yeah, you and I both, pal. You and I both. It's all good. But what's the latest that we're hearing down at Morning Skate? Sounds like there's some news coming out about the potential of Nazem Kadri making his first appearance in the Cup Final tonight. What do you think?
I feel skeptical. I mean, let's all try and decode this together, because we've watched Morning Skate. So here's what we see. We see progression day to day, skating on his own, no stick. Now he's skating and he's got a stick, but he's not barely handling a puck. Now he's got a stick and he's handling a puck, but he's not shooting. Well, now he's got a stick and handling pucks, and he's pushing his hands up against the boards trying to test it. This is like a day-by-day chronology, but he's not out with the main group, and he's not shooting. Well, today he goes out with the main group. He's on the second power play unit in the bumper spot, and he's kind of not really shooting. Now, we also notice that he did not stay out afterwards to do any sort of conditioning after. So you take all of that, and then you got a head coach that's like, yes, possibility. Like, they're not giving us anything.
Yeah. No.
So my sleuthing skills tell me this, and you guys tell me if I'm out to lunch. I think he's going to try it for warm-up. You don't freeze your hand for practice in the morning. You would probably do it for the game that night. I think they freeze it, see how it looks and feels in warm-up, tries to shoot a few pucks, see how it goes, and he's a maybe for the game. That's where the evidence takes me, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, so I can tell you firsthand experience. I was in the Calder Cup playoffs playing for the Utica Comets, and I had a broken bone in my hand, right on the top of my hand.
Okay,
I think it's
perfect.
The metacarpal bone. And they froze it. Two games in a row, we froze it. Fractured bone. The first game, I was able to get by. Like, I was okay. I couldn't feel my hand. But I feel like the game didn't throw a lot at me where I really needed to be evasive or make any kind of quick plays, because literally I could not feel my hand, so you have no proprioception of where your hand is on your stick. Mm-hmm. And then the second game, I don't know if there was a different doctor there or what, they put so much freezing in it. Like, it was way too much, and I had just the worst game. It was actually playing against the Oilers farm team, Oklahoma City, back in the day,
yep.
Ryan. And
yep.
I couldn't feel my hand. I just had the worst game you could imagine, and all the Vancouver coaching staff, Willie Desjardins, Doug Lidster, they were all there watching the game. I was like so embarrassed to have played that game. So there's a little bit of a balancing act. There's going to be a little bit of a balancing act for Kadri, because you can freeze it and it'll numb out, but are you going to be able to feel your hand so you can actually play and make plays. But I think the bumper spot on the power play is a little indicative of him because, yeah, he's not going to be handling the puck. You're not going to have him in a premier prime position. But in that situation, it's just little touch pass, maybe a receival, maybe a high tip. So I could see it. I could see it. But you're right about not freezing it in the morning. You're going to wait till before the game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, he's a great player, right? What does he have? He's got 14 points in the 13 playoff games he's played. He's scored 6 goals. What a great season. He's a huge part of it. But this is the thing. Like, this is a massive game. And if you have Kadri in the lineup, like, what if there's a mishandle on the wall because the strength just isn't there? What if there's a minute left and he's the guy in grade A prime scoring opportunity and he can't get the shot off properly? Like, They'll figure out where the limitations are and whether it's a good idea or not, but this is just the margin for error in a Stanley Cup final is so slim, and I know he's an excellent player, but what percentage do you need him at? And your puck handling skills, of all things for Kadri, that's the bread and butter. The guy's got fantastic hands, so it'll be really interesting to see what decision they make with him tonight.
Yeah, because it may be better off to hold him off to Game 5, bring him home, and let the crowd electrified by a return of Nazem Kadri, and then that's just a couple more days of rest where potentially he will have a little bit more of a handle with the puck and whatnot in the game. But
well, they're still in the driver's seat. I think you make a great point. They're still in the driver's seat, so why rush him? Like, if they lose tonight and he's ready to go next game, there's your jolt of energy, right?
Yep.
If you win tonight, well, you don't necessarily need to rush him. So it's kind of... I agree with you. I think that's a great point. Maybe holding off one more game is really strategically what makes the most sense.
In conversation with Ryan Rashog, our TSN hockey reporter, who's down in Tampa for the Stanley Cup final. Ryan, who do you think this game is more important for? I kind of was talking earlier and thinking how it's a bit of a swing game where it almost seems like the winner of tonight could win the cup because Tampa doesn't want to go down 3-1, but at the same time, Colorado doesn't want to give Tampa Bay all the momentum that they had got through games 1 and 2, knowing that they have that killer instinct. So who do you think this game is more important for?
I think it's more important for Tampa. I think if Tampa wins this game, you flip a coin here moving forward. Mm. I think if Colorado wins this game, the series, I think, is going to be all but over. So I've made this prediction, and it's kind of an easy one to make because you sound smart if it works, and if it doesn't work, nobody really remembers you said it. So I've been running around saying this to as many people as I can, just maybe on the off chance I'll look smart. Here's my prediction. The first night that the Cup is in the building, Colorado has a chance to win the Stanley Cup. They're going to win by 4 goals. This team with the Cup in the building will not be denied. They will steamroll anybody you put in front of them with the Stanley Cup in the building. That's what my instinct is watching this team play for the last 2 rounds. So they win tonight, back at home in Colorado, Cup in the building. Now, I have been guilty of underestimating Tampa multiple times in this series, which the sage veteran Pierre LeBrun has clocked me over the head with several times. He says, listen, young man, like, do not underestimate this Tampa team, and I have been guilty of that. So keep that in mind with my prediction.
I think a lot of us have. Before we go, Ryan, just want to touch on the 3-year deal for Jay Woodcroft. Obviously, takes the Edmonton Oilers to the Western Conference Final. What makes him the right man for the job?
Well, I mean, just look, and by the way, $2 million a season for Jay Woodcroft. Like, 17 years it took him to get his first head coaching job in the NHL. He grinded his way through, starting as a video coach and working his way through, and he just signed for $6 million. Like, what a life-changing event. We often don't think about this, right? We just think, he's got a young family. Like, holy smokes. And this could have gone either way, guys. When they brought him in on an interim basis to replace Dave Tippett, it could have gone either way. So he brings him in. They bring him in. And immediately there is an adjustment in the way they play. More players are more involved. There's more attention to detail defensively. It's not some crazy complex system. He just made everybody feel like they were pulling on the rope in the same direction. He empowered more players. He went to McDavid and Draisaitl and said, listen, you're going to have help here. We're going to get more guys helping. And they did. Their defensive numbers were better. Their overall team game was better. He brought out the best in some players who hadn't been flourishing. He got great contributions from his top players as well. He just figured out a lot of really good buttons to push guys, and then they went to the third round of the playoffs. I said this about Jay Woodcroft before the playoffs. What happens in the postseason does not matter. Sign him now. Like, just get that deal done, because all you're going to do is cost yourself money. What he did in the regular season was enough to get that contract, sign him. And then he can coach free and easy, right? You're not coaching from an interim spot, hoping all your star players give you the thumbs up in their exit meetings. You're coaching with your contract in your pocket, and you're coaching free. And I think they cost themselves money by waiting. And, I just think that this could have been done before. But it's great for him. It's well-deserved and well-earned, and he's the right guy for the job, in my opinion.
We only got another maybe minute or so here with you, Ryan.
Sure.
But really quickly, you got a message for the five dopes that didn't put Connor McDavid in their top five on the Hart ballot?
You know, I mean, listen, I don't vote, and I'll be honest with you guys. I know you guys are just having fun. I'm not too hard on the guys that do. It's not easy. Your votes are made public. I think everybody tries hard. We all can disagree with one another, but it makes absolutely no sense. But you know, I mean, this is the same system in which, you know, Puljujarvi got a vote for the Selke. Like, sometimes anomalies happen in this voting process, right? So. I don't vote. If I would have, I would have voted for Austin Matthews this year. I think that for anybody out in Edmonton who might be saying, oh, Eastern bias, I don't buy that at all this year. There may have been some of that in the past. I don't know. But when the players around the league give Austin Matthews the nod and the Hart Trophy goes his way too, that just illegitimizes in a way that's like, yeah, this guy was the best player in the league this year, the most valuable player in the league this year. Nothing harder to do than score goals. So no issue for me.
When it gets coupled with the Ted and Lindsay, it kind of debunks the Eastern bias, I think, a little bit there.
For sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan, it does. And it was a landslide, right, in the top voting for the Hart Trophy in the first place voting. And that's what I would have done, too. And I watched McDavid play every single game, and I still would have voted for Matthews. So.
Ryan, appreciate the time, pal. Enjoy game four tonight.
Yeah, this was fun, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. There he goes. Ryan Mashauger, TSN Edmonton Bureau reporters down in Tampa Bay for game four tonight.
What a game that is, man.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Go down there, watch some hockey down in Tampa. Although it's pretty nice here in the GTA and in Niagara area. It's very sunny outside.
It's humid, man.
Yeah, but Florida's got that humidity, too. That's super humid in Florida. On the other side, Hazy B stops by. We'll get into what he thought about Austin Matthews and the hardware he took home last night, what it means for the franchise, and get his thoughts on a couple other things around the NHL. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frank Corrado. Brian Hayes coming up next on Leafs Lunch.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Welcome back into Leafs Lunch. Mike DiStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. Got Frank Corrado filling in for Julia Tesheri today. And Frankie, do we sit here and fester for the next couple of minutes, kind of give this man a taste of his own medicine? What do we do here?
I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to rile this guy up because I know Overdrive at 4 p.m. is going to come in fairly hot. So do we want a little test run here on Leafs Lunch, see what's cooking for 4 o'clock?
We probably should. Let's bring him in, though. We don't got much time to chat with him, so we might as well not waste it. It's Brian Hayes, the host of Overdrive. Hazy B, how's it going?
It's good, boys. I don't mind waiting. I mean, I don't mind. Listen, I got to be consistent here. I make people sit and wait on hold while we're finishing off a take or finishing off a conversation, so it's all good. I mean, I got to play by the rules that I've created. So it's good, though. Thanks for having me on.
As always, I mean, anytime a monumental, you know, something happens within Leafs Nation, got to have the guy who's got the pulse on the show. And Hazy B, last night, Austin Matthews, first Leaf to ever take home the Ted Lindsay, first Leaf since 1955 to bring home a Hart. My question to you, though, is like, did it lose its luster a little bit, or was it still as special as you thought it would be? Or because, you know, he's been out of sight, out of mind for so long, it was kind of like cool. How'd you feel about
it? Yeah, it was, I mean, let's be honest, anything associated with the organization, including Matthews, you get to the playoff conversation pretty quickly. Like the fact that they lost again and they haven't gotten out of the first round in 6 years, and he's had an unbelievable six-year career, but we can't get past, so you can't look past the reality that they haven't had any playoff success. And the fact that it has been over a month with him out of sight, out of mind, it did kind of creep up on us a little bit. I don't love the idea that they wait until the cup final because of the nature of what we witnessed last night. The fact that the guy who wins the most important hardware hasn't played in a month, month and a half. But yeah, what comes with, you know, the Ted Lindsay, the heart, and 60 goals, like, this guy established three things. There has been a heart winner in the past, or an MVP, but it's been a long, long time, 67 years, I believe. There's never been a Ted Lindsay winner, like you pointed out. But there's also never been anyone that hit 55 goals, let alone 60 goals, which was a monumental achievement and one that everyone got to enjoy. And I think the fact that he did that with the Ted Lindsay, with the heart, makes it such a memorable season, regardless of what happened in the playoffs, because he established something else that had never been done. I think you just have to marvel at the guy. He's just an unbelievable player. Leaf fans are incredibly lucky that he gets to play in Toronto, that he's in Toronto. But it's a regular season award. You know, like, it is something that should go without saying, but as you guys, I'm sure, have experienced the last 24 hours, when tweeting about Matthews or talking about Matthews, people around the league, fans around the league are going to say, but hasn't won in the playoffs, which, again, you can't fight. You can't argue. That's a fact. But in terms of a regular season, it might be the greatest of all time for the Leafs. It may be the greatest, certainly, in the modern era. The only one I can think of would be the Gilmore year in 93. And I think what would push Gilmore a little bit further ahead of Matthews is what happened with him after the regular season. The fact that he took his team on his back and dragged them all the way to game 7 of a conference final. So from, like, day one of camp until the handshake line, I think Gilmore in 93 is still supreme for me. But in terms of just game 1 through 82, I think you can make a strong argument that what Matthews just did is the greatest regular season of all time.
And Brian, I think when you read off the resume of accomplishments for Austin Matthews, it's hard to argue that it's not, that he's not the best Leaf player of all time. But I guess my question to you is, what needs to happen for him to become the most beloved by Leafs fans? Because I feel like there's still a little bit of luster around some of the older guys like Dougie and Sundin and Wendell. And I feel like Matthews isn't as beloved as those guys, despite the fact that he's had all these incredible accomplishments.
Yeah, I think the answer is pretty obvious, Frankie. We know what it is. It has to be playoff success. I mean, that's
right. But what's that threshold? What's the threshold? Is it a round? Is it a conference finals?
No,
is it multiple years?
Like, I think it's multiple years. It's likely somewhere between getting to a cup final and multiple years of multiple runs. And like that, it's one or the other. He's got two paths. Like, if next year they get to just a cup final, that's something that no one else has achieved in the last 55 years, including Gilmore and Clark and Sittler and Sundin. So if he gets to a cup final, and he's obviously going to be the face of that team and the guy who's kind of leading the charge, then I think that would surpass him. And I think if it's not going to be getting to a cup final, then it's got to be multiple years of success. Again, which happened in the early 90s with Gilmore and Clark, happened multiple times with Sundin. In 99 and 02, they got to a conference final. It seemed like they won playoff rounds every single year. So it's one of two avenues, and needless to say, if there's a cup actually included in that, then it's just you're arguing who's number two. And what that actually might do is, if they get to a cup final and win one, it might drag Marner into the conversation of number two. And then you might be talking about who's number three and four, et cetera, because it would be such a significant achievement. But I think during the regular season, he's as beloved, in my opinion. Like, I have not experienced a guy who has got that building hopping. And I know the history of that building and the reputation of that building. But when Matthews is chugging on a Saturday night and he's scoring goals, that place is electric, and he's the one that's got people on the edge of their seats. So as much as Gilmore was beloved for different reasons, Wendell was beloved, Sittler, Matz, I think Matthews is right there, if not, you can make an argument, surpassing those guys during the regular season. But in order to be the greatest of all time, in order to be the most beloved athlete, maybe in the history of the city, and I think that legitimately could be within reach, it's got to be cup final minimum or multiple years of playoff success. And if he does that, then I think it's a lock. I don't think there'll be really any pushback.
In conversation with Brian Hayes, host of Overdrive, 119 first place votes going to Austin Matthews on the Hart ballots, just 29 going to Connor McDavid. Were you surprised to see such a wide margin for the Hart trophy?
I was. I thought it was closer to a coin flip going in. I did kind of expect that it was going to be closer to a coin flip. But the fact that the Ted Lindsay, Matthews won the Ted Lindsay, would suggest I think it's accurate. I mean, I was advocating for Matthews to be the MVP. I thought he was worthy of the heart. I thought he was the most dominant player of the season. And I think considering the fact that his cohorts, his players, his fellow players thought the same and voted for him, would suggest that I think that was an accurate analysis. But I think what McDavid is going to suffer from, LeBron James has suffered from, I think Mike Trout has suffered from, is there is going to be McDavid fatigue. Like, he has set the bar so high that now, in order for him to be back in contention, I think he needs like 150 points. You know, he's going to need right. a 50-goal season, like, or 55, you know, whatever it happens to be. And it's probably not fair, but LeBron, you can make an argument LeBron James should have won like 10 straight MVPs, you know, and yet you'd find one for Harden because he had such a great year and LeBron didn't have a career best season, or you'd find one for Russell Westbrook or whatever it happens to be. And I think that's probably what's going to continue with McDavid. The guy is, in my opinion, still, he's the best player in the world. He's the most dominant player in the world. I think Matthews is right there at either number 2, 3, maybe 4. He's certainly in the top 5, and anyone that's in the top 5 could put together an incredible season and win a Hart and a Ted Lindsay like Matthews did. But I think Matthews was worthy of it, for sure. He would have gotten my vote if I had one. I would have probably had McDavid at number 2, but I think he'll suffer from the fatigue of greatness and setting bars so high that he may not be able to overcome them, and as a result, he may miss out on some more hardware.
And Matthews was talking afterwards a little bit about how he looks up to McDavid and he pushes him and, you know, they go head to head a little bit. Do you think we could see something here over the next few years where it's like 1 year it's Matthews, 1 year it's McDavid, a little bit of back and forth between these guys? Or do you think one kind of takes over the other here going forward?
Well, I think it would be on Matthews to keep pace. I fully expect McDavid, if he's healthy, every year he's going to win the Art Ross or close to it. Every year he's going to dazzle. He's going to be the talk of the league because of who he is and what he's already created in terms of a reputation. So I fully expect McDavid's going to pull his weight. I think it's on Matthews to keep up, and I think the only realistic way he can is if he keeps scoring at an absurd rate, which he has done, and there's no reason to believe that will stop. Right? He's only 24. He's been in the league for 6 years. There's no reason a fully healthy Matthews can't score 65, and if he does, then you could have a situation where it's like Ovechkin and Sid, where they're going kind of back and forth. And Ovi had 3 hearts. He had more than Crosby. You know, I don't think Matthews will catch McDavid, let alone pass him. But I certainly expect if Matthews keeps scoring 60-plus, he will likely win at least one more heart, if not more. And that's enough to keep you in the race. But you can't sleep on Draisaitl. You can't sleep on McKinnon. You can't sleep on Kucherov having an unbelievable season. There's just so many incredibly talented players. I fully expect McDavid to keep pace. I fully expect Matthews to keep scoring. But there will be a difference now with Matthews because of the bar that he set, where if he scores 52 next year, technically it's a down year because he set a bar so high, and it might go against him in a similar fashion to the way I just explained with the McDavid fatigue.
With Brian Hayes, host of Overdrive. Brian, Chris Johnson reported yesterday on Insider Trading that looks like Campbell may want north of $5 million, McKay between $4 and $5 million on the open market. If that's the case, you think these guys are as good as gone?
I think, McKay will likely be gone. There's a difference between wanting and actually getting, as you guys know. I mean, of course, you can want whatever you want. You can ask for whatever you want. But the market will determine what you're actually going to get. Mikheyev, that's, I think it's been a foregone conclusion. He's probably leaving anyway. Remember, there were reports he wanted out. They gave him a ton of opportunity this year, and to his credit, he absolutely salvaged the opportunity. He had a very good year, and I think he's a good player. He's not a star. He never will be a star. I think he's a third line, more of a depth piece than a guy that you build around, and I don't think they have room for $4.5 million for a guy who's going to be on the third line. In fact, we know that they don't. So if that is out there and he's seeking the top dollar, which he's entitled to, then I expect McKayev to leave. Campbell's the dicey one because of the nature of the position and also what else is available. Like the Leafs have really got to be delicate here because I know, you know, in a perfect world, you find a guy on the cheap who strikes iron or you know, and it just takes off and has a great season. But that's asking a lot. And, you know, you can't, if you cheap out on goaltending and then you get the wrong goalie, your season's effectively done before it started. Yeah. You know, like you need goaltending. It's the most important position. We're going to find out tonight. Vasilevsky and, you know, whoever's going in, the determination of that position is so significant. Goaltending will determine where every team in the league is going in the future. The Leafs are no different. So if they don't have a better option, or if they feel like there's a guy who they can get for two and a half, but he's just simply not good enough, and they think Campbell can be good enough, but you got to pay him an extra $2 million, I'm sorry, you got to pay him, and you got to shave the money somewhere else because you need goaltending. It has to happen. So I'm not convinced that number completely pushes Campbell out. I think it pushes him towards the door, but I don't know if it's completely out until they realize, okay, we have better options regardless of the money because, yeah, the cap is going to count, but you've got to solidify the position. You've got to have goaltending. It has to happen.
Yeah, we'll see what direction Kyle Dubas and company decide to go in over the next month or so. We'll probably get that answer. Hazy B, thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to hear you at 4 o'clock.
All right, Frankie, Al's brother, always great catching up with you guys. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. There he goes, the legend. Brian Hayes, host of Overdrive. Jay Woodcroft going to be on Overdrive today, actually, at 4:30. Newly minted head coach officially of the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah, big time.
Look at the grappler. The grappler grappled him in.
He certainly did. The grappler, one of the best. One of the best. And speaking of best, coming off the heels of the NHL Awards, we decided to do a bit of a 1050 Awards.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Let's get that thing cooking. We only got a couple of minutes here. Let's start the music, Nick. Let's get the award show music going. And let's get the music. There it is.
Oh, wow.
Sounds a little bit like...
This is already better than the NHL Awards.
A little bit more. It sounds kind of like some Jurassic Park music, to be honest with you. But we'll take it. We'll take it. Yeah. Look, the first award we're handing out here, the Hazy B. And it's got to go to...
So is this the MVP? Is the Hazy B the MVP?
This is the Ted Lindsay, my guy. This is the Ted Lindsay. Why don't we keep the music going just, like, I don't know, as a little bit of a bend underneath? No? Okay. Hazy B.
No music.
It's got to go to Brian Hayes, ultimately. This is going to Brian Hayes because it is the Hazy B award.
Cheering? Any crowd cheering noises? We got to have that.
He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT here.
Hazy B.
The GOAT here at TSN 1050. So he gets the Hazy B award. I mean, it's named after him. He's going to win it each and every year. Every single year, it's going to be Brian Hayes. Most underrated? Who are we giving that to?
I picked this one. I've done a lot of hits with him on gameplay. I love this guy, Matty Caws. Are you kidding me? This guy is so underrated. I love Matt Caws.
Matty Caws is the best because he just fills in everywhere. He honestly is a beautician. Even did like last weekend, they did... there was like some festival that he was doing a spot with for 1050 on a Saturday.
Dude,
the man comes to work on a Saturday.
Matt Caws could deliver a baby, okay? This guy could do everything. He's versatile.
He probably
rookie
could.
Of the
he
year.
Probably could.
Who's the rookie of the year?
I think we got to give it to Julia. We got to give it to Julia Teixeira because she's the true rookie. I mean, you know, AK and I, we technically are rookies this season. We never had our own show, but we at least have had a little bit of dabbling the last couple of years.
You guys are Michael
Radio.
Bunting. You're six year pros in the American League, and you just got your first taste of the big leagues.
Exactly. JT, she's Mo Sider. She's getting the rookie of the year. But we are giving AK the breakthrough host, though. Like, that guy's doing a tremendous job up on the morning show.
Logging hours. And he's got a reel in Carlo every morning, too. So, big job for AK.
I can tell you, all right, 6 a.m. wake-up call is not for me, though. I can tell you that.
The Pat Quinn Award for Coach of the Year goes to Al's brother for his performance at the CHL-NHL Top Prospects game. Al's brother, Imlach. Love that.
Al's brother, Imlach. Makes sense. The most valuable drop, this is probably the drop that we heard more times than any other drop over the course of the last couple of months. Let's play it. The MVD.
Not the best.
Not the best. That thing gets played probably 6 times per show. Six times a show, I would say. Not the best.
We got the Grit Grinder. Yeah, going to our guy, Nick, Bob, Rick, McVicker.
Yeah.
The guy, man. There he is, our technical producer for Leaf Games with me and Taddy. And speaking of Taddy, we have a advanced stat award to give out. The most snacks consumed per 60 minutes, and that goes to none other than Jim the Tatman Taddy, my
mentor. That guy, he literally is standing, during the Leaf games, standing waiting for those ice cream sandwiches to hit the cooler.
Oh, yeah.
And he's
the,
first
dude,
in
the
line.
Pizza, the pizza, they come get him. They say, Jimmy, pizza's ready. And he walks over. It's like, it's
what
incredible.
What yeah. a veteran. I hope to get
that's
to
it, buddy.
One point where that happens.
All right,
that's
show
it. That's
today.
The 1050 yeah. Awards. There it is, Frankie. Appreciate it. Everybody behind the scenes, it was a fun show. Good show. But that's going to do it for us here today. If you missed any of the show, you can find it on TSN1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Frank Corradi. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch, Game 4 tonight, Tampa Avalanche. We'll see how it goes. Gameplay with Matt Cause next.
That is me. I am now a bozo.